The jury has found Kyle Rittenhouse not guilty on all charges. That's after shooting three people last summer in Kenosha, killing two of them and injuring a third. The shootings took place during the unrest after the shooting of Jacob Blake. During the trial, the prosecution argued Rittenhouse provoked the violence by bringing a rifle to the protests. Defense attorneys said the shootings were in self-defense. You can join in at 800-642-1234. What's your reaction to the Rittenhouse verdict? Do you feel like the jury got it right or wrong? What did you think of how the trial went? What piece of evidence or testimony stood out most to you? And what do you think of self-defense laws? We'll be talking about that some today. Do you think they need to be changed? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. John Gross is a clinical associate professor of law at the University of Wisconsin Law School and director of the Public Defender Project. John, welcome back to Central Time.
Happy to be here. Thanks for having me.
Well, as we talked about last time you were on, a lot of this case centered around the concept of self-defense on all of these counts. Was that key to the verdict today?
I'm sure it was. I mean, although the jury doesn't tell us specifically why they found the defendant not guilty, it was very clear from the presentation of the evidence that Mr. Rittenhouse was asserting that he was privileged to use deadly force in self-defense. That's what the defense team argued. That's what the prosecution argued against, that he was not justified in doing that. And so with the acquittal on all of the counts, I think the message is that the jury was not convinced that he was not acting in self-defense.
You wrote in a piece that came out earlier today that you expected this acquittal, these not guilty verdicts, because of your reading of self-defense law. Looking at that narrowly, not looking at the wider context and political debates around the country regarding First and Second Amendment rights, you think that under the letter of the law was the right call?
I do. I know that the verdict will be frustrating for some folks. I know that they will look at this scenario and say, why is he privileged to use self-defense? He was a 17-year-old with a dangerous weapon. He was out when there was a curfew, saying that he shouldn't be out. He was engaging with these other protesters and demonstrators. And so doesn't this amount to some type of provocation that does not allow him to resort to deadly force? But that simply is not the way the law is written. So I don't think if people are tempted to say they feel like the jury got it wrong, I don't think that's fair to say. I think the jury was following the law as it was given to them, and this is the result that the law dictates.
You went on to write, though, that the law should maybe change. What do you think we need to reexamine in our self-defense laws here in Wisconsin?
Well, I think there is this issue about openly carrying firearms, particularly firearms that are high capacity, are extremely dangerous in terms of being semi-automatic. Many people feel uncomfortable around those types of weapons in certain situations where it doesn't seem to be warranted, necessary, even useful to have those weapons openly carried. And I think the question becomes, do we want to think about perhaps regulating some of the situations in which we think it's appropriate to have those types of weapons? There are other issues about, you know, at what point does someone gain the privilege to use self-defense? Is it enough that somebody is attempting to reach for the gun that you have when they're concerned about their own safety because you're carrying a gun? Does that provide justification for using deadly force? And so there are a lot of questions to ask about things like the standard of proof that we require. In this case, prosecutors needed to disprove beyond a reasonable doubt that Mr. Rittenhouse was acting in self-defense. And so they weren't able to do that. And I think, again, under the facts and circumstances of this case, I think the jury came to the right result. But if people feel strongly that this was not the right result, then the thing to look at is how we apply and how we define self-defense under the law.
How does Wisconsin's self-defense law compare to other states?
It's not inconsistent with what other states do. I don't want to suggest that Wisconsin is an outlier here. I don't think we are. But I think the question does come up, you know, when we talk about the use of deadly force and when we talk about the use of certain types of firearms, should we be thinking about making it harder for someone to claim that they were entitled to use a firearm to shoot someone? I'm not suggesting that, you know, I have a definitive answer about this, but I do think it's something that should be open for debate and discussion, especially if people think that the acquittal of Mr. Rittenhouse does not comport with their sense of justice. Then again, the discussion should be about how do we define self-defense? When is someone entitled to use it? And especially when it's self-defense with a deadly weapon like a firearm.
John Gross is with us, clinical associate professor of law at the University of Wisconsin Law School, director of the Public Defender Project, looking at the not guilty verdicts and all charges against Kyle Rittenhouse, the verdicts released earlier this afternoon. You can join in with your reactions or your questions for our guest at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or email ideas at WPR.org. We'll go to a caller now. Mitch is with us in East Troy. Mitch, hi.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I just wanted to, I sort of just address the fact that it's interesting that in this case, the guy that pulled the Glock on Kyle Rittenhouse and was actually moving towards him and about to execute him in the head with his 9mm Glock was not even brought charges on. So I think it's interesting when we're talking about, you know, possibly relooking at the law itself about when you're allowed to defend yourself, that the prosecutor in this case didn't even bring charges on the guy that was under video evidence to have brought a Glock almost directly to the side of Kyle Rittenhouse's head.
Mitch, thanks for the call. I'm not sure, John, was that person charged? I honestly don't know.
No, that was Mr. Grosskreutz, and there was a question put to him during the trial about the fact that he was carrying a concealed weapon. He had previously had a permit to carry a concealed weapon. It had lapsed at the time of the shooting in Kenosha, and he talked about that a little bit on the stand, admitted that, but also said that he had, for all of his adult life, regularly carried a pistol with him in for purposes of self-defense.
Thanks for the call, Mitch. And a tricky thing about self-defense is it's easy to imagine situations in which both parties believe they are defending themselves. In this case, protesters may have believed that Kyle Rittenhouse, with his weapon, who had already shot someone at that point, maybe not knowing the circumstances, believed he was an active threat and could claim that they were acting in self-defense, as did Kyle Rittenhouse. Is there something to that?
Oh, there's absolutely something to that. And this is the type of volatile environment where Wisconsin's open carry law, you know, it may cause far more harm than any good, because in this type of chaotic environment that you saw that evening in Kenosha, there were people who were openly carrying firearms. There were people who had concealed firearms. There was a lot of confusion and chaos, demonstrations, counter demonstrations, people who said they were just there to try to keep order and protect property. And in that type of environment, it's very difficult to tell who is a threat to your safety when so many people are walking around with weapons. And so, you know, everybody has a Second Amendment right, everybody has First Amendment rights, but I think one of the questions we have to sort of sort through is when people are demonstrating or exercising First Amendment rights, does it make sense in those environments to sanction the open carrying of firearms that could be perceived as threatening or could frankly diminish people's willingness to exercise their First Amendment rights if they're going to be confronted with a line of folks who are armed with these type of military style weapons?
We're talking to John Gross, clinical associate professor of law at the University of Wisconsin Law School and director of the Public Defender Project. He's with us today to talk about the verdict in the Kyle Rittenhouse trial announced earlier today, the jury finding Rittenhouse not guilty on all charges. You can join in at 800-642-1234. What's your reaction to Rittenhouse being acquitted on all charges? Do you feel like justice has been served, or are you disappointed in the outcome? Do you think we need to revisit self-defense laws in Wisconsin or around the country? You can join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. We'll continue the conversation coming up on Central Time. This is Central Time. I'm Rob Barrett. We're picking up our conversation about today's verdict, finding Kyle Rittenhouse not guilty on all charges. John Gross is with us, clinical associate professor of law at the UW Law School, director of the Public Defender Project. You can join in at 800-642-1234 with your reaction, with your questions for our guest. The number is 800-642-1234. Let's go back to your calls. Mark is with us in Milwaukee. Mark, hi.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I am very disappointed but not surprised. I think the way the judge treated the prosecution in front of the jury biased the jury against the prosecution. I'm wondering if our guests could answer this question. Would the families of the victims be able to bring, or could there be civil rights actions brought against Rittenhouse in federal court?
Mark, thanks for the call. Let's tackle each of those in turn. First of all, John, observers, especially those hoping, I think, for a different outcome, thought they saw bias from the judge in this case against the prosecution. What are your thoughts on that?
I did not really perceive Judge Schroeder as being biased in this case. I think people had very strong opinions about this case going into it. We all knew what the facts of the case were. There were no surprises during the trial. And so if you started from the position where you believed Mr. Rittenhouse should be found guilty, then what rulings the judge made were filtered through that lens, right? And if you felt strongly in the other way, you again had a particular, I think, bias starting out. I think the judge was holding the prosecution to their burden of proof in this case. And it was something that in the end, they just couldn't meet.
And then Mark had also asked about possible civil suits from the families here. As I understand it, the state, after an acquittal, can't appeal that. The federal charges could be brought, but I don't think there's any movement toward doing that. Is there an opportunity? Are there grounds for someone to file civil suits, though?
I think the caller he mentioned civil rights, and that's not really something that would happen here because civil rights violations are committed by state actors. So if police officers were to commit a homicide and it was unjustified, then the federal agencies could investigate and there could be a prosecution in federal court. But there could also be civil filings in this case for wrongful death. Those filings might not be just against Mr. Rittenhouse. They might also include the city of Kenosha. And because of the conditions that existed that night, because of police officers at least tacitly approving the presence of Mr. Rittenhouse and other folks who were armed, and also there in violation of the curfew that had been set out. So there may be more litigation down the road, yes.
Thanks for the call, Mark, at 800-642-1234. We'll go to Erica now in Lake Tomahawk. Erica, hi.
Hello. I just wanted to my thoughts on it. Now, I am a vet. I spent 6 years in the Army. I've been fired upon, and I've fired back. Carrying a weapon is an inherently aggressive act, and this punk didn't go down there to guard anything. He went down to shoot someone. They didn't seem to bring this out in the trial. He was marching around with that gun to his shoulder. Basically, I felt looking for someone to shoot. Well, by God, he did. And then he cried and felt bad for himself. Somebody's going to beat him up, conk him over the head with a skateboard, and he shot him dead. Well, that's like, that's a pretty wicked response. And that didn't seem to come out in that. He went down there to kill someone.
Thanks for the call. John, that motivation, obviously the jury didn't see it that way, but also with open carry laws, there's nothing that says you, I guess, can't carry a weapon in that fashion, right?
That's correct. And the caller's point about viewing that behavior as inherently aggressive is really what gets to the heart of this issue. Some people firmly believe that Mr. Rittenhouse's behavior by arming himself in that way, by carrying that type of weapon in the way he was carrying it with it strapped to his body, that this suggests that he had some ill intent, that he was going there looking, as the caller said, to engage in violence, to shoot someone. And that in fact, going armed in that manner is provocative, it is a provocation for folks. And so if people responded by attempting to take the weapon away from him, or they responded aggressively toward him because of that, then he is essentially creating the dangerous situation where he feels he needs to use deadly force. And the law, to be clear, doesn't allow you to provoke the other person and then use deadly force. But with an open carry law, it's difficult to argue that he's doing something that is provocative. In fact, the legislature, when they passed the open carry law, they went back and rewrote the disorderly conduct statute to say that somebody openly carrying a gun absent some other evidence is not creating a disturbance. And that's where people differ.
Thanks for that call. We were talking about the verdict in the Kyle Rittenhouse charges, not guilty on those charges. John Gross is with us from UW Law School. Back to your calls now. We've got Jeff on the line in Schofield. Jeff, hi.
Hi, how are you?
Good. What did you want to bring up?
Thanks for taking my call. This boy at the time was a victim of Old West justice. He was tried and in the media the entire time. He was found guilty before the trial even started in the media and public opinion. The verdict was justified, and all these people with these opinions on what happened at that site, if you didn't watch the entire trial from beginning to end, you have no say in this. Absolutely none. Because they're speculating and they're guessing just like the media did from day one. Justice was finally done, and everybody that raged race against this thing, they're absolutely insane. I don't see where anybody that didn't watch the whole trial can have any voice in this whatsoever.
Jeff, thanks for the call. What do you think, John?
Well, again, this case has been polarizing from the start. And I often tell people that, you know, you can't, you know, trials are not referendums on any type of a movement or an ideology. Criminal trial is just a very narrow proceeding, where somebody's charged with a crime and the prosecution has to prove every element of those charges. They have to prove them beyond any reasonable doubt. And I think sometimes various media outlets want to put a particular spin on not just this case, but other criminal trials. And I think that can be a dangerous thing. It really can be, because the trial, all that we learned today from the verdict was that the prosecution didn't prove those five cases beyond a reasonable doubt to that jury.
Thanks for that call. We'll go to Jimmy now in Valley Junction. Jimmy, hi.
Hello. I guess my concern is this kid's going to be a poster boy for anybody that thinks that with a rifle or a handgun, that thinks they want to show up to some kind of protest and, you know, make themselves a vigilante. I'm just afraid you're going to have both sides bringing weapons to things like this, and it's going to get out of hand, and pretty soon you're back in Deadwood, South Dakota in the 1880s, and I'll take my comments off the air.
Jimmy, thanks for that call. I've seen other people raise the concern, John, is this a blueprint for someone who wants to show up with a firearm on any side at any issue and hope they can find a justification to use it?
I mean, I think that is a legitimate concern in this case. I mean, I just mentioned saying that we can't, you know, draw a lot of conclusions from an individual criminal case. But I think when we look at the way the law played out in this case, and the way the law of self-defense is, when you combine open carry of firearms and you combine people exercising their right to protest and petition, and you also have this environment where people are armed. Yes, this is a volatile, dangerous environment. And what we don't want, as the caller said, is to create some type of blueprint for people who want to engage in some type of political violence and use open carry laws and self-defense laws as a kind of pretext to engage in that type of violence.
Thanks for the call. John, as I mentioned earlier, you wrote today that you hope we revisit and maybe rethink how we define self-defense and the standards for its use. Do you think that's likely to happen?
I don't know. I mean, I would have to say that, you know, this is a debate that is complex. It requires people to keep an open mind. It requires people to reach some type of compromise on Second Amendment rights. And there are many folks who are just unwilling to compromise those. And they see any type of limitation on their right to carry firearms or use them in self-defense as a constitutional violation of their rights. And so I would hope that the legislature would have a debate about this, think about what the law is, what it could be, what it should be, and do it in a way that's open and honest. But you know, we are very polarized. So it's a big ask that I'm making of folks.
John, we'll leave it there. Thanks for joining us again.
Oh, my pleasure. Happy to do it.
That's John Gross, Clinical Associate Professor of Law at the University of Wisconsin Law School and Director of the Public Defender Project. He was with us today to talk about the jury's decision in the Kyle Rittenhouse trial, finding him not guilty on all counts. You can follow further coverage from our news team over at WPR.org or watch stories as they post on the Ideas Network Facebook page.